Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Łukasz Wachełko. I'm representing WOOD & Company, and today I have the pleasure of moderating the call with AmRest, which is represented by CFO Eduardo Zamarripa, Chief Executive Officer Mark Chandler, and Chief Strategy Officer Peter Kinneiler. Not to go too long on my end, so Peter, microphone is yours.
Actually, I think I'm going to take over first. Thank you. Again, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Hope you and your families are doing well. It was probably actually about a year ago, exactly a year ago, during our 2019 year-end earnings call that we first discussed COVID. It was then that I told you about the drop we had in the China business, which was quite significant due to the virus. At that time, it was really more local, so we had not really seen any impact on our European business, and we were kind of hoping that that was going to be, you know, kind of a minor effect for it. But of course, like many other companies in our 28th history, we really have never experienced such a degree of disruption. It was and really in such a short period of time. So thanks to our business that we had in China, we kind of had a heads up, head start on understanding how serious this crisis was, and also what actions to take. And that allowed us to kind of got, I think, really react faster than most companies in Europe. But despite that, early and really kind of bold actions to mitigate the impact of it, the first lockdown was quite severe for us in the spring, and we saw as much as 56% of our stores close, and also really cut in half our same-store sales compared to last year. So for us, It was a lot to absorb in a very short period of time. But as the months of the restrictions started to ease and the first wave, we saw how strong our brands are and there how fast the customers were returning to our restaurants. And we actually went up to about 90% of our same-store sales number by September. We were trending really positive. We, of course, talked about that on some of our previous calls. And we also, at the same time, anticipated that there might be a next wave, so the second wave and more lockdowns that would eventually hit us in Q4. So during the second wave, we were able to keep, at this point, over 90% of our stores operating, and also our same-store sales were in the range of roughly 80%, despite some really strict lockdown measures. But also, we really, I think, achieved some good things despite the restrictions and the lockdowns. So we were able to manage to increase our cash position from about $138 million at the end of the first quarter and almost roughly $100 million at the end of last year to we closed at the end of this year at $205 million. So nearly doubled year on year and also about $70 million more in cash. Also, we reduced our net debt versus 2019 by nearly 50 million euros. So I'm not sure too many companies have been able to do that during the crisis. For me, I'm very proud of the AmRest team. I've said this many times. They're truly committed to what's going on. We're really focused, laser focused, in executing the actions we needed to take. We're able to maximize the sales and costs, manage the costs. Also, the cash flow and balance sheet, which we were already talking about, we needed attention, got special attention. We had a cash task force that we still have in place today that takes a look at what's going on globally for the company. And also, people sacrificed a lot of time and effort. It was daily meetings and such. So I want to thank everybody at AmRest team. I'm very proud of them. Also, at the same time, I would say we strengthened our partnerships with our key stakeholders, and I'm talking about the landlords, suppliers, our franchisors, I've talked about them before, our franchisees, because we have a growing community there, and most importantly, and not last, is the banks. The banks we've been dealing with since I formed the club back in 2009. We work with them very closely together on how we can deal with going forward. So since the last call, as I said, we made a lot of progress on the cash balances and also with the discussion with the club banks, especially with we get to the definition of covenants for 2021. Since our last call, and we talked about it, we were able to finalize a global transaction. We weren't sure if we were able to get that in by year end. There was a lot of effort, especially by Peter and his team, to make it happen. We have almost the entire amount of 76 million euros we received in December, which certainly helped us. And the return on our investment was three or four times what we put into it. So I was very, very pleased with the whole transaction. It was a point in time for us to sell Global. We had learned what we needed to learn. We're still in partnership today with Global and have a very good relationship with them, especially in the Spanish market. Also importantly, since the last call, we did come to agreement with our club banks. I know there was a lot of concern about that by everybody on the call. We were able to obtain waivers for the next three quarters, and that replaced for that period of time our normal leverage covenant. And so we will be looking for liquidity covenant for $80 million, which is going to be reduced to $50 million for the third quarter. And at the end of this year, we'll go back to the liquidity covenant. So I think it's a great outcome, especially it helps us reduce some uncertainty that's out there. And I also think it underlines how strong we have a partnership with the banks. We're also just completed revising our operating plan for 2021. For that one, I really wanted to have a proper balance between growth and cash management. Our recovery probably has taken a little longer than I thought because of the second wave. There's certainly some differences by country, by brand, and by category. Peter will take you through a little bit more of the details on the sales trends, but I do want to touch on a couple of brands up front. First, I'm very encouraged by the performance of Sushi Shop. Throughout this past year and also the beginning of this year, we've seen very strong same-store sales. We've been positive almost the entire time. We started off this year also in the 120 index versus 2019. So it's been very positive direction. Of course, profitability is what we're continuing to work on to improve margins, and we're making progress there as well. Had a very strong January, both in sales and profit. In fact, last week we had our highest sales week in our history of Sushi Shop. So we have also a very strong pipeline in 2021, especially with our corner project, which is with Auchan and some other hypermarkets. Also, China. China has been one that's been continually, probably, of course, went in first, went down from, I think when we on the call reported, we went from 114 index down to 12 in same-store sales. It recovered quite fast. We actually finished ahead of last year, both in sales and profit, and also in terms of versus our internal plan. So, and we've had another good month in January and February as well in terms of sales. So, and we'll be actually start reporting to you, and people mentioned as well, given the fact that our numbers now, same-store sales numbers, are going to be kind of hard to read year on year because of COVID being last year, we will show a lot of comparisons to 2019, so you can see really how strong the business is going. Also, the other, you'll see also that Russia also did very well in terms of margins, though it was probably, other than Spain, hit most strongly in terms of the impact of COVID in terms of the market and our employees. So they did a very nice job in terms of cost control. And again, it's a good end of the year and good start of the year on Russia. The most important market probably for us to deal with of COVID right now is Spain. As you know, we have two very strong brands, and Lutella and KFC. Casual dining is certainly the one that's going to take more time to recover. For those people who hear and read or live in Spain, know there's a lot of restrictions going on. We're hoping those will start to be reduced as we're seeing some reduction in number of infections in the country. And for us, as you know, it's a good margin for us and also on tag. So I think though we're well positioned to rebound, very strong brands. We've also developed during this period of time delivery and takeaway for us. So it's Spain is one that's on for us. If we can get that market to turn around quickly, then I think for the company overall that will speed up a recovery. And finally, the QSR category, not surprisingly, has done very well. KFC we talked about before, and, but also Burger King has actually performed equally as well as KFC. We see a lot of momentum on the brand right now, and for us, we're looking at both KFC and Burger King exceeding, being in the positive same-store sales versus 2019. So, and Peter's going to touch more on that in more detail in his section. But certainly, we know that we feel that we're going to come out of this crisis stronger than we went into it. I think we're well positioned in several areas, and those and that focus has not stopped. One of the trends we're seeing is consolidation of the industry out there. We've seen a lot of small independent operators exit. We've also seen some activity even in the French market and in the sushi business, too, where our competitors are exiting the market. So, and we're seeing a lot more of the market share going to large operators like ourselves. So it is our opportunity right now to continue to take market share. We didn't close our restaurants, but even some of the other big operators were there, so we took some market share, and we're and our intent is not to give that back once we exit COVID. So we're seeing the crisis really be more of an accelerator of that trend. It was already a trend in the market, but we see that's something that will continue as we go forward. Also importantly for us is we developed channels, new channels, and also expanded some ones that we were already in. Fortunately, we were already in the delivery area, but we weren't necessarily across all our brands. We had a very small business in China and the Tagliatella in terms of the casual dining business, having delivery. That changed a lot. We also took a concept from the U.S. Also, I know it's used in the Middle East. It's called curbside. So you can have somebody come out to your car without contact. And it's something that's worked out quite well for us, especially in the QSR side of it. So we're going to build that into our new, as we renovate our restaurants and build new restaurants, we will make sure we have parking available to handle that, to handle the new channel for us. We also talked many times about our intent to have a multiple aggregator strategy. That's performing quite well. We've now started, and Peter can probably elaborate more in his section, in Poland, where we had only one player. We've already added a couple more. And since it is our largest market and going to multiple aggregators, we've seen the numbers rise quite quickly in the delivery area. So we see that as a future opportunity for us as we fully expand that. And finally, again, Peter will talk more about it, but our Shadow Kitchen project has proven to be quite successful. We've been cautious about it to make sure that we have everything together. We've also launched not only virtual brands, but also our franchise brands. So, and the results, again, are good, especially the one we had to open up at the end of last year. And finally, we also took a look at our portfolio. It's something I had talked about pre-COVID. There are some territories, some stores, and some businesses that have been impacted negatively our results. We took some actions, and that's why you've seen a higher number in terms of closures, and that was on purpose to try to set itself up for 2021 and going forward with a more streamlined portfolio that's going to help us on our objective to improve cash flow and also improve margins. We've also seen some trends, important trends, more favorable for us in some cost categories and rent. We have been renegotiating our leases. We've had very successful with that. But we see probably the more positive impact going forward is going to be in signing new rents. We've seen a lot more properties on the market, more willingness to get a big player like ourselves into those locations. So far we've been seeing some positive news on that side. Regarding food costs, which of course is our biggest category, our food service division really has done an excellent job on keeping costs down. We're going to be probably about the 50% of CPI. And then in some categories, important categories, we're also going to see some deflation. So I would think that most people would think our food costs be going up, but we've actually been able to stabilize that and actually do much better than the market. And finally, labor, which is a little bit more unpredictable because a lot depends on government intervention. There's certainly a lot more people in the marketplace, and hopefully that will slow down a bit the inflation that we're seeing on labor. But again, that's a harder one to predict at this point in time. So we also are making good progress on Amyris 2.0, and this is a name that we put to the business model that I outlined to use to all of you since I took over as CEO. We are in that model aiming to leverage off the strength of our brands, and that was in one area I talked about is being asset light, which means doing a lot more in franchising. That's going to allow us to increase our margins, reduce our CapEx, and also have a very healthy free cash flow, which is, again, something that has been a concern of many of you over the years. So we are going to remain a growth company. I know this, you're used to seeing much bigger numbers in terms of openings and that, but it is our intent. We just want to see how this plays out in terms of COVID. So I don't want to send a signal that just because our numbers in terms of openings are in the area they are, that we're stopped growth. It's just taken us time to see where it's coming out with COVID, but we will see how we can re-accelerate profitable growth through both a combination of both franchise and equity openings. And certainly, if an M&A comes available at some point in time and it makes sense, we would take it to the board. So we are still in the growth mode. For the year, we're still going to be a little cautious on our new store openings. We opened up 88 in 2020. Right now, we're looking at approximately 130 gross openings this year. Really pleased with the franchise pipeline that we put together. We had 14 franchise openings in 2020, and we should triple that to roughly 45 to 50 for this year. So the pipeline is actually going, is building faster than I expected, and so that's good news for us. The focus on that pipeline is on Sushi Shop and Pizza Hut. So we're, the asset light model is, I think we're executing quite well that. So certainly the benefit of that is going to be on the CapEx. We used to have very large CapEx numbers when we used to do the calls. The budget is about $50 million for store openings only. That compares to $60 million in 2020, and that number was already low compared to the past. So we do see a significant decrease in spend, but also at the same time, though, our new store openings is going to be increasing 40-50%. So I think it's headed in the right direction. So we need to also to be able to ensure that we can deal with possibly another wave, which we don't anticipate, but we do. We have back end loaded a lot of this year's equity openings so that we can be flexible in the spend. But I do see a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, so I think we're very optimistic where this is going. I know some of you also probably always ask about CapEx spend for the year. We're going to be in the 110 to 120 total CapEx. I want to make sure I note that, so I know for your modeling and understanding that. But I think we're going to continue to generate profit. Margins we're focusing on moving back up again, and also on reducing our level of debt. So we'll kind of update you over the next couple of quarters. We're progressing on that. I'm hoping that we can have a little bit more positive news on COVID overall by the next call. So again, I'm very pleased with where we're at. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Eduardo, who's going to take you through the financials. Eduardo?
Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everybody. Now, as I move to the financial highlights of the quarter, the total stores count is 2,337. We were able to keep in the range of 92% the stores open across the quarter. The net sales amounted to $397 million and implies a decline of 24.9%. The biggest decline was registered in November, while in December figures, we showed a recovery. On quarter-to-quarter basis, revenues decreased 9.9% versus third quarter, but was higher by 46% versus the second quarter. Restrictions in wave two had an effect on our numbers, but we are much better positioned compared to mid-year. Same-store sales for the fourth quarter reached 78.8%. On month-to-month basis, the biggest drop was in November, and we were able to recover to a 79.6% in December. Our dining formats were the most impacted. The sales reduction had an impact on our results, but at the same time, we continued with our actions in cost and expenses reduction initiatives. Rent negotiation and reliefs, as well as government aid programs, enabled to generate savings. The consolidated EBITDA amounted to 47 million euros, representing a 63% decrease over the year. EBITDA margin reached 11.8% and shows a lower margin than the achieved in Q3, but higher than the achieved in the first half of the year. In the fourth quarter, we registered a rental relief benefit of 3.2 million euros, and for the full year, the relief amount is 18.6 million euros. For the fourth quarter of the year, the benefits received from different governments related to payroll and social contribution programs amounted to 5.8 million euros. For the full year, the grants amounted 29.5, which are included in the other income line. In December, we sold our 7.5% stake in Globo for 76.2 million euros. These transactions have no effect on P&L, as in December 2019, we revalued that asset. For our cash flow, this transaction injected additional liquidity in December. Net profit attributable to AmRest shareholders amounted to minus 23.5 million euros. Now I will move to the segment information, particularly on Central and Eastern Europe. The revenues reached 171.5 million in the fourth quarter and were 26.1% lower compared to the same period of last year. Taking the advantage of QSR orientation, we strengthened the position in delivery, drive-through, and takeaway. The fourth quarter EBITDA stood at 25.6 million euros and was 48% lower than last year. EBITDA margin stood at 14.9%. Adjustment to available channels, strong operations, and supportive government aid helped the region. Continuing with Western Europe, for the fourth quarter, sales reached 158 million and decreased by 25%. Spain and Germany remain the most affected due to more casual dining and coffee segment-oriented business. France posted 5.8% increase in sequential basis due to more delivery and takeaway-oriented brands. The fourth quarter EBITDA was 8.6 million euros with a margin of 5.4%, highly impacted but lower top line. For Russia, sales for the third quarter amounted to 38.3 million euros, down 31.2% versus last year, mainly driven by the closed food courts impacting the share of a store's operation. In China, in fourth quarter, improved the path of recovery. Sales year-on-year were slightly up. In the fourth quarter, the EBITDA had a strong recovery with a margin of 31.9%, an impressive recovery versus last year margin of 25.2%. Improvement in sales along with cost savings initiatives implemented helped to achieve a record segment profitability. Now with regards to the balance sheet, we have a very strong cash position of 204.8 million euros. Cash preservation is still one of the top priorities in AmRest through the cash task force that we cover cash flow and EBITDA initiatives. The cash task force is a global effort across all the functions and supported by each of the countries. It's a must to keep generating cash from operations. making the investments that give the highest returns and be able to have a positive net cash flow. The cash flow for operating activities in the year amounted to 170 million euros. In terms of investing activities, we kept a very disciplined approach in terms of capex. For the year, amounted to 91 million, and we incorporated 75.5 million euros from the sale of our global stake. In terms of financing, we complied with all the scheduled amortization payments, and we announced in December an agreement with our club of banks for a longer covenant waiver. It covers the fourth quarter of 2020 and the first three quarters of 2021. It replaces the leverage and interest covenant ratios, and a liquidity covenant for the period is in place. The liquidity level assumed by the group is 80 million euros and lowered to 50 million for the third quarter of 2021. In addition, we received a covenant waiver for a majority of 77% of our Shunshan bond holders. As a result of the above, net debt at the end of December 2020, excluding the impact of IFRS 16, equaled 559 million euros. In these challenging times, we were able to reduce the out net debt in 70 million euros. This is a very challenging environment, but we are following a series of initiatives in order to secure the continued and improvement of operations of AmRest. Now, I will turn the call to Peter for his remarks.
Thank you, Eduardo. Hello, everyone. So what I will be trying to do is to give you a maximum amount of disclosure on the trends we have been seeing since beginning of this year. And hopefully that helps you to increase visibility on your side in this environment of general uncertainty. So with that in mind, let me talk you through some highlights around current trading. As of beginning of this week, we are operating 93% of stores, which is a slight increase from the 92% we have seen in January and at the end of last year. Breaking that down into geographies, out of our main markets, we are fully or almost fully, so anywhere between 98 and 100% operational in Poland, in Hungary, in Russia, and in China. But of course, that doesn't mean that we can operate all the sales channel in those markets. On the other hand, the share of temporary closures is highest in Germany, Spain, and Czech Republic, where we operate around 80% of equity and franchise stores. With regards to same-store sales, and those are, as always, adjusted for temporary or COVID-related closures, as Eduardo just mentioned, we have been at 78.8% index in the fourth quarter of last year. In January, we have improved to a level of around 80%, and in February so far, we are in an 82 to 85% range. Now, remember that in the third quarter of last year, where we had an environment mostly without lockdowns, we have been at 86.6 overall. So now, with a full lockdown, or pretty much a full lockdown in place, we are only a few percentage points off, which is not a bad achievement, I believe. One point mentioning also on same-store sales trends, the key drivers, sushi shop, as Mark said, very strong, posting north of 120% same-store sales index in February and 113% in January. Blue Frog in China, that's a continuation of positive same-store sales trends we reported also in the last quarters. KFC in 3 out of the 12 markets we operate is same-store sales positive in February. And in case you're wondering, these are smaller markets for now. That's Bulgaria, Croatia, and Austria. Burger King, we are same-store sales positive for the month in 3 out of 5 markets, which again is Bulgaria, but also Romania and Slovakia. So overall, when you look at the different brands and the trends we see, this looks very encouraging for us. And that's a result of our teams optimizing and maximizing the sales via the channels which are available to us. And that's visible also when looking at the structure of sales by channel. 44% of sales we have seen here today are being generated through takeout. That compares to a level of 29% before COVID. 27% by delivery, which compares to 13% pre-COVID, and up to 34% during the first wave in spring last year. 15% by drive-through versus 5% before COVID, and 14% in dining. And that obviously used to be a much bigger number. That was 52% in the previous year. It is worth highlighting that the share of takeout is about 10% higher now than it has been during the first wave, and that thanks to efforts of the team actively working on shifting business, especially from delivery, where we of course got the additional cost of the driver, no matter if we do the last mile internally or through third parties. And therefore, as you know, takeout is by far the most profitable channel for us, and the increase we see is visible across all brands. To give you some feeling on how the structure of sales might look like post-COVID, given the permanent end of restrictions, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, we could go by learnings and observations of last summer, where we could see the following. One, people return to dining. 43% to 44% share last summer, despite the virus still being around back then. Delivery stayed higher, but was back to 15% to 16% from the north of 30% during the first wave, but obviously higher than the 13% we saw before COVID beginning of the year, so in January, February 2020. Takeout, and that's very good news, takeout is still or was still about 10% higher during summer, and in fact even higher than during the first wave. Of course, we can't say how habits will have changed post-COVID, but so far those trends look encouraging. Our teams are doing a great job also allowing customers a smooth transition, and they're managing the migration between the different channels extremely well. Looking ahead, we certainly don't know any better than you do about the timing of vaccinations and the eventual end of restrictions, but we believe that our business can recover fast once we reach that point and are coming out of these lockdowns. It took us about 6 months to get same-store sales from 50% to close to 90% during last summer, but back then the number of cases was lower, but there was still a risk and a threat to people affecting customer habits, especially in casual dining. Hopefully very soon we are talking about a permanent reopening and people being vaccinated. So our thinking is that the pace of recovery could be even faster than back in summer of last year, especially also as our starting point in terms of open stores but also same-store sales is higher than it was last year. A few comments on growth. Mark mentioned the 130 store opening target for this year, and I'll focus on franchise stores. This year, growth will be organic. We're not eyeing any acquisitions at this point in time, but as was said before, that, of course, can change in the future. At the same time, we have been working through the portfolio of unprofitable, we call them dog stores, to do less of what consistently costs us money. We certainly have been tough on those than in the past, and as a result, we have closed 87 stores in 2020. Probably unsurprising to you, around 30% of those closures have been in Pizza Hut, followed by close to 20% in Starbucks due to a cleanup in Germany. Going forward, those closures will positively impact profitability as they have been dragging us down previously. We are not fully done on closures. The plan is to finalize the cleanup with about 40 to 50 additional closures this year. Finally, some words on an initiative we are very passionate about, which is our rollout of shadow kitchens and virtual brands. We got our 4 shadow kitchens operating and 6 virtual brands so far, all in Poland. We have now started to connect, as Mark said before, aggregators other than Glovo and Wolt beginning of this year, which is especially important when it comes to the largest platforms as the market leader, which is Takeaway.com or Pigeon.pl. But we also added Uber Eats as a partner, and I'm very happy to report that as a result, the order numbers are 2 to 3 times higher when looking at January and February, which is another piece of evidence that the multi-aggregator strategy, which we put in place some while ago, is working, and you can actually increase the incrementality of orders, and you can reach different types of customers. And the result I was just reporting in Shadow Kitchens this year is without any promotions or other marketing initiatives so far on our side. A great outcome. And for this year, the plan is to open 5 additional Shadow Kitchens. Let me close by saying that we are very optimistic about the shape of the company, the motivation and commitment of the teams, and the prospect of recovery this year. And we think that for us, this recovery will be strong. And with that, I will hand back to the moderator to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, you can press star followed by 2. For those who've joined us online, you can press the flag icon to register a question. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted locally. Our first question is from Hao Pinto of JB Capital. Hao, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one, you mentioned there's consolidation opportunities in the market. Would you consider M&A in 2021 if you see a good opportunity? And if so, which type of restaurants are you looking for? Regarding gross openings, 2 questions. The first one, just to confirm, these 130 gross openings planned for 2021 includes the 45 franchise stores as well? And does it include dark kitchens? And also, on the gross openings, can you give us some color on the breakdown between brands and geographies? And finally, my last question is on rent negotiations. Do you have any estimates of how much you will be saving on a recurrent basis versus pre-COVID levels? Many thanks.
Okay, so maybe I'll start off on this. In terms of the consolidation, certainly if there's an M&A that's out there, we would come to the board on it. So we are seeing consolidation. As I said, I'm a little cautious because of COVID as to, because cash is still important for us with our bank covenants and such. So, but we still look for those opportunities. The multiples have dropped on those that we've always been approached by people on it, but the multiples have been kind of the same as pre-COVID, using pre-COVID earnings, and so we've been waiting, and then we're seeing a few more drop off. So if I look for an area for it, it would be more in probably in the QSR area. I think probably KFC would be of a particular brand within the portfolio, but we'd also look outside of that. But so that would probably be the area that we would look at. So we're not idle in terms of looking at things. We just haven't seen anything that meets kind of the criteria of, I really don't want something that we have to fix that's broken and going to take time. We want something that we come with a strong organization, has white space to grow, and margins are going to be able to kind of be accretive to what we do today. So we have some pretty strict criteria. Size of it also would make a difference. We don't want a lot of little ones because they do take time in that. In terms of openings, you're correct. Of the 130 openings, the 45 franchise are part of the 130. That number, hopefully, we still see a pipeline growing on that 45. The dark kitchen numbers, the five that were mentioned by Peter, are not in that number. We decided to, because then you have multiple brands in that, so we have not added that in. So those are additional openings to the 130 that we mentioned. So, because sometimes it gets very confusing as to how to count that. So they're not in the numbers we talked about. In terms of where we do a lot of the openings at this point in time, we've renegotiated our franchisor agreements, so we're focused on the brands that we have. Certainly, in terms of our own brands, Sushi Shop in particular, we'll see a lot of openings for next year. That part we're going to see a lot of corners, which are low investment but then very high return for us. KFC also, especially in Central Europe, we have a large opportunity there. So we are going to continue to explore that one. So, and of course, we have our Burger King numbers as well. We're probably a little more moderate on Starbucks because we have to see the recovery of Starbucks there. Same thing probably with La Tagliatella because of also being casual dining. But we do see that probably the biggest amount of openings in our portfolio will be coming from, for equity openings, half the equity openings will be from KFC, more than half of that. And again, in franchising of the 45, we see a very strong pipeline right now for Pizza Hut and for Sushi Shop, so that's going to be pretty evenly distributed between the two of them. Hopefully that answers the question that you had.
And the addition of that you had in terms of rent negotiations, particularly for the third quarter, we got a relief of rents of 3.2 million euros. Still, we have some reliefs for the following months, and we have that like in two fronts. First, the negotiations we got back to our landlords, and given the effect that the COVID is having on our sales, we were able to negotiate some reductions and some deferrals, and we continued having talks with them to continue with those benefits. And the other part is that we also negotiate rents in a percentage related to revenues. No, so that went automatically, given the impact that we already have on that, we have already embedded in our numbers.
And Joao, let me add maybe two sentences on M&A. We are now in an environment where you're not rewarded for jumping the gun. Now, for quality businesses, and these are the ones we're looking for, there is no valuation incentive or any other kind of incentive to be quick and to be the first one to make a move. So that's why I said, no, at the moment there is nothing. There are always things on the table, right, generally being offered, of course, but there is nothing we're looking seriously right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joao. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. Or if you've joined us online, you can press the flag icon in your web browser. Our next question is from Christoph Kauer at Ipopema Securities. Christoph, your line is open. Please go ahead.
So I would like to ask the follow-up question, if you could give more color about the multi-aggregator strategy in February in Poland. How is it performing, and when do you plan to expand also to the Pyszne.pl or takeaway.com? It is the first question. And the second one is the expected value. What may be the expected value of the state support when it comes to rentals or
or salaries in 2021? Do you expect anything to arrive from this front? And the last question concerns the asset light model. I've seen that, for example, in Russia, you managed to change some of the Pizza Hut equity restaurants to the franchise ones. Is it the only market or only example when it's quite successful, or do you manage to do so in any other markets? And how many restaurants may this year be transferred from equity to franchise? Thank you.
So maybe I'll start and probably start at the last question first, and then I'll have Peter go answer the multi-aggregator one. In terms of, you're right, we did with the asset light model during 2020, we did convert by refranchising our Pizza Hut business. We sold to current franchisees. And then where we focused actually was primarily in Russia, but also in Germany. We had roughly 10 stores, equity stores in Germany, so we've already converted a couple. Our intent is to do a few more stores in Germany because a couple markets, you know, it's been harder to make money on. We started out also with 40 equity stores in Russia. Some we've closed, as Peter mentioned. We also have been successful in refranchising some, and we have our desire is probably, and it leaves us now down to 20. We start out with 40 in equity, and so we're looking to see if we can reduce that probably in half. So I would say, and we also have a couple opportunities in Central Europe, and in particular probably in Poland, because we do have our desires as you grow is to have not single operators but people who are able to have multiple units, and sometimes the easier way to do is also include sell them an equity unit that will allow them to have a starting point, and then they'll with a commitment to build some more. So our franchise teams, we've spent a lot of time, probably a couple of years ago, the area that we were not so strong on other than in Spain was in franchising, because it's a whole different set of skills, and we have a separate team, strong team, only with experience in that area, and that's what they're working on is as they build a pipeline, is are there opportunities also to convert some of our equity stores to help us in that opportunity there. So that's the area we're working on. In terms of state support, we're not planning on a lot of state support. We have had some in the first couple of months in some countries. Hungary in particular has been there. Some other countries, we have not seen much at all, any action from Poland, which is the biggest market. So we are still seeking that. We're also seeking how we can get there through, you know, not only for employees, but also whether it's in taxes and that. And we're certainly with a lot of the associations we're on the associations with other big companies and that, trying to make sure we can, because there's some countries that we've been more severely impacted than others. But at this point in time, we're not forecasting that because I think we're still hoping we're going to get some help, but we're not planning for it. So, but we have had several million euros come in the first couple months, but that some of it was also carryover from last year. And then also, Peter, maybe you want to talk about that, expand a little bit more on Poland, on the aggregator.
Yeah, sure. Well, just to let you know, Shadow Kitchens have always been excluded from these exclusivities, right? And Poland was a specific case generally for our business, delivery business, because we sold Pizza Portal to Glovo, and part of this agreement with Glovo was that for a certain period of time, we go exclusive with Glovo, but Shadow Kitchens were excluded from that. And the reason why generally shadow kitchens have to go multi-aggregator is that the model only works, you know, if you have the broad reach and you actually have, you know, all the aggregators lined up to increase the number of transactions. So we could go very quick, and the reason why we just signed up with Uber Eats and with Fishnet was not that, you know, there was a contractual or any other, you know, limitation to third parties. It was more technical and, you know, design of the process, yeah, because we just opened the shadow kitchens and there was a step-by-step approach. So we went, you know, slightly earlier in terms of the rollout. And the reason why I mentioned this, that number of transactions as soon as we plugged in Fishnet and Uber had been 2 to 3 times higher than the previous levels when we went with Glovo and with Wolt, is to give you a kind of a feeling that there is an impact, no? So obviously we are now doing the same, or we have been doing the same the last couple of weeks for the remaining delivery business in Poland. We expect an impact. I'm not sure it's going to be 2-3 times. I think that might be too ambitious, but I think there will be impact. And it verifies what we said in the last quarter call, that we think we can get incremental orders by signing onto other platforms. Unfortunately, we are still in the process. We go pretty much on a store-by-store basis. So we are not nearly done, and some people on this call have asked me when, you know, finally they can get on Fishnet PL, the KFC and the BK. It just takes time. So I can't report any hard data, but looking at shadow kitchens, we are encouraged to see a significant impact. But probably with first quarter results, we can give you some data on how much that is.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Krzysztof. Our next question is from Jean-Pascal Rolandez of LT Funds. Jean-Pascal, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, and first, congratulations for an outstanding job through this crisis and through the challenging last quarter. Crisis revealed weak spots, and in your acquired portfolio, there are two weak spots, which are Starbucks in Germany and Pizza Hut in France. So I'm curious to know what you intend to do with those two assets, because crises are the good time to shake things up and reshape things. So this is my questions, but again, congratulations.
Thank you very much. So you hit on two spots certainly that get a lot of attention for all of us, especially for me. In terms of Starbucks Germany, we have been working actually with Starbucks in EMEA and also out of Seattle as well, and talking with Kevin Johnson, the CEO of Starbucks, because it's a key market for them. And so we are working on a couple initiatives with them, some on the technology side, which they're helping us with. And so it's been a very good partnership, and we're still continuing to talk. I have a meeting next week to talk further about new opportunities there. The technology side is one where certainly we're going to work on mobile order to pay and a loyalty program, which don't exist. There's also some called technology stack or that they have that's been introduced into the UK and has been able to add anywhere from 5 to 10 points in same-store sales. So we believe that the big thing for us is to drive sales. Sales is what's there. The market overall right now, because of COVID, and I guess Starbucks overall, has been tough. But even without COVID, we know we need to do that to drive sales in Starbucks. So we have several initiatives with Starbucks, and again, it's all the way to Seattle on this particular market. So, and we have our brand president's going to be spending more time in Germany to work on how we can execute that program. So, and Starbucks is helping us in that investment. So I've been very, very pleased with them from the very beginning on the journey. So it is for us as well as it's very top of mind for us. So we need to make that turnaround. But for me, we've been driving on costs and areas like that, but it has to be sales. Sales has to drive that. And again, we're lacking because of what we inherited over time and because of the how long it takes in Germany, especially with work councils and that, to make things implemented. We're going to get there, I think, with the loyalty program. And the mobile order to pay is huge for us there. And we've also introduced a food platform that didn't really exist, and we're seeing it work well in some of the markets now that we've introduced it into. So so several initiatives there, and again, with the focus on that. And but certainly we'll keep updating you along the way and how we're making the progress there. The other one, and actually in Pizza Hut France was a lot about cleaning up the franchise community. For what we bought, we had a lot of issues on how it was selected. As we move forward and the discipline we've had, we've been able to kind of clean that up. Actually, the same store sales we've been seeing, even during the crisis here, has been actually close to 100% same store sales. So that actually the market, and we've also agreed with we're working with Yum, Pizza at Yum, on investing in that market as part of what we've agreed to. So we will be helping to expand the franchise community, working on some more platforms digital-wise, which will also drive sales. So it is a market that I think was just not well managed when we took it over, and is something that we see upside to. So I see Pizza Hut France is not so much for us as difficult. I think Starbucks Germany will probably be a little bit longer to do just because of the situation in Germany right now with COVID, and also and how that impacts businesses like Starbucks. But I'm more optimistic about Pizza Hut France than I was a year ago, actually. So we have a new leader in the team. We put a new leader in there and strengthened the team that we had in France. So I think we're heading in the right direction, and I'm happy to, in the future, to give you updates on that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Jean-Pascal. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask any further questions, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now, or if you've joined us online, you can press the flag icon. It looks like we currently have no further questions, so I will hand back to the team.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Again, I know it's been an interesting journey this past year for everybody here. Again, we're all anxious to get through this, but I think we're well positioned going forward. And again, I think I don't want to, again, to send the message that we're going to stop growing. So I'm hoping that we can start seeing some positive news in the markets, in particular in Spain and Germany, where we're seeing it happen. But I want to thank you for all your support. Without that, it wouldn't all be possible. And again, I want to thank the Amyris team, the people who worked very hard to make this happen. So I want to thank you and wish you the best